Warning. This episode discusses the sensitive and potentially triggering topic of suicide. Discretion is advised. This episode is dedicated to the memory of Eric Rieschick and Robert Limpert. Hello and welcome to the Minds in the Frontline podcast, brought to you by the Frontline Strong Together 5 program. FST5 provides streamlined access to behavioral and mental health services, as well as crisis resources for Michigan's Frontline 5 workers and their families. This includes all professional, part-time, and volunteer firefighters, EMS, law enforcement, corrections officers, and 911 dispatchers in Michigan and their immediate family members. FST5 was collaboratively created by first responders and mental health experts to provide 24/7 live support, effective resources, and cutting-edge services to prevent and alleviate PTSD, anxiety, depression, and other frontline work-related mental and behavioral health challenges. Need help now? If you are a frontline worker in Michigan or an immediate family member experiencing any crisis, work-related, substance abuse, depression, relationships, financial, or any other, reach out by calling 1-833-34-STRONG or go to fst5.org for more information. I'm Jeff Lassers, one of the hosts of the Minds on the Frontline podcast, and I'm a professional firefighter, paramedic, educator, and content creator. Minds on the Frontline is co-hosted by Mike Mattern, who is also a professional firefighter and paramedic. In addition, Mike is a peer support team member for his fire department and the Frontline Strong Together 5 program, as well as the chair of the Michigan Professional Firefighters Union Behavioral Health Committee and a board member of the Michigan Crisis Response Association. Mike has training and experience with frontline worker mental and behavioral health. On the other hand, I do not. My role is to produce the show, whereas Mike is our resident subject matter expert. Together, we hope to inform, educate, and entertain frontline workers, their families, and the public regarding the realities of frontline work-related mental and behavioral health challenges. Today, we welcome back Manisha Leary, who is the FST5 program manager and a therapist with a focus on trauma. In addition, we welcome Ashley Freeman, an EMT who is also working towards her master's degree in social work. Once she completes her program, Ashley plans on becoming a therapist that works specifically with frontline workers. Although she is currently living a healthy and happy life with a bright future, things were not always so positive for her. Ashley always looked up to her father, Eric, a dedicated paramedic, and aspired to follow in his footsteps. As a child, Ashley's dream was to one day become an EMT and work with her dad on the road. However, life took a tragic turn when her father died by suicide in 2013. This profound loss would take years to overcome. As a testament to her resilience, Ashley overcame her grief and achieved her EMT license in 2017. During her training, she found a mentor in Robert, her father's best friend and fellow paramedic. Robert's support was a comforting reminder of her father's legacy and pride in her strength and accomplishments. Yet, in a heartbreaking repetition of history, Robert, too, passed away by suicide shortly after Ashley completed her training. Despite these painful losses, Ashley continues to honor the memory of both her father and his best friend through her commitment as an EMT and future therapist for frontline workers. During this episode, Ashley will tell her story of tragedy and eventual triumph. Thank you, Ashley, for coming on the show and having the strength and the bravery to tell your story. The goal of this episode is to openly discuss suicide in the frontline community so that we can continue to break through the stigma and other barriers that prevent too many of our brothers and sisters from seeking the help that they need. To everyone that is listening, if you or someone you know is struggling with the thoughts of harming oneself, please call the National Suicide Hotline at 988. Or, if you're in the state of Michigan, 1-833-34-STRONG. That's 833-347-8766. Please check us out on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and make sure you like and subscribe to all Minds on the Frontline podcast social media channels. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Good morning.
What's up? How are you, man?
Very well. Well, welcome back, Manisha, again. You've been a staple to this. You're like a third co-host to this.
I am not a third co-host. I think people are beginning to think
that. We like it. Well, we love you. And you brought along Ashley today. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, thank you, Ashley. You're an EMT. More importantly, you're here to kind of tell your story as an EMT and as a human being, really. So, Ashley, why don't you lead off by telling everybody who you are, what you do, and where you do it?
So my name's Ashley. I'm an EMT in Northern Michigan. I've been an EMT for 6.5 years now, and I'm a student at Wayne State, and it's my senior year. I'm working on my bachelor's degree in social work.
Awesome.
Woohoo!
Awesome. Okay. Right on. So EMT to social work, that's relatively unique. You know, it's still technically healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. It's a much different situation because nobody's calling you to get in a truck and run to them for their psychological emergencies, but certainly they do happen. So Ashley, you're from Northern Michigan, not to be confused with the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, right?
Correct.
Yeah, we got more than people listening around the nation, really, and they're not all from our lovely state of Michigan. So like the UP is kind of like, you know, East Wisconsin in a way.
Yeah.
You're not quite there. You're in the upper part of the mitten. Cool. So what's your orange story? How did you get to the point where you're an EMT now becoming a social worker?
So I grew up downstate in Metro Detroit. My dad was a paramedic. His wife was an EMT and a dispatch. I grew up in the back of an ambulance. I knew from a very early age that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be just like my dad. Little girls used to like play tea parties, and I have all these memories of me like in the living room playing paramedic with my dad.
I didn't know what to do.
It's really good memories that I have, and I didn't know what to do. So he'd sit there and he'd be like, "All right, hold C-spine." it was really funny. Looking back, it's one of the memories that I really cherish about him. They used to have mass casualty mock scenes, mm-hmm. and I was always a part of that, and I loved it. And so when I turned 21, I realized like, hey, I'm ready to do this and I'm going to follow my dad's footsteps and it's going to be great. And we had a conversation and his work was actually holding a EMT class relatively soon. And he talked to, you know, the instructor and had me on the list and I got a spot right away and I was so excited. And I remember talking to my dad about doing my third rides with him and how I was going to learn everything from him. And it was going to be great. And I was going to, once I got my license, I was going to be his partner. And my dreams were coming true. And it was awesome. And I loved it. And then.
No, you're all right.
That's okay. Take your time.
Take your time.
So then in January of 2013, that dream kind of shattered. My dad committed suicide. And so I had to go through that process of losing him. And not only that, but I lost my dream. You know, I was going to be just like him and I was going to do everything with him. And when he died, I realized I wasn't going to be able to do any of that. So it took me quite a few years to be able to come to terms with the fact that I wasn't going to be able to do this with him. And I remember talking with his best friend, who was also a medic. And he helped me, you know, go through the process of grieving him. And he said he knew the instructor for their EMT class. And I said, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to do it. And I remember the first day of class, the instructor, you know, was up in the front and said, "Who's Ashley?" And I like nervously put my hand up and I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? And I remember him looking at me and saying, "You got this. We're going to get you through this." You know, he knew the story of my dad and his best friend. And it was awesome to know that my dad wasn't here, but I had people that had my back still. So I remember having to go through the class and struggling and having to go through the grieving process because it brought everything back up that he's not here. He's the one supposed to be teaching me all these things and he's not. And I remember being mad at him for it. So after my dad died, I remember his funeral and having all these people tell these great stories about him and how he was such a great medic and he helped people with their medic too. And I remember being mad that he was gone and I didn't get to experience that, but also so jealous because they got to experience that and I wouldn't be able to. And that's part of the reason why I struggled once I got into classes. It brought all that back up that I wasn't going to be able to have all these experiences that all these other people got. But I was able to get through school. I did my very first third ride with his best friend. And I loved that. You know, I didn't have my dad, but I had Rob. Mm-hmm. So that was really awesome. And I passed EMT. And it was great. Sorry. Make me cry.
Oh, you're good. You're
good. It's okay. This is
all right. This is...
This is what we're here for. This yeah. is why we do this.
I lost my dad too soon, too. I get it.
It's hard. So I got through EMT and I passed. And I remember my medical practical, and I remember my instructor looking at me at the end and saying, "You'd make your dad proud." And I remember walking out of the room just bawling my eyes out, and my classmates were like, "Oh my gosh, what happened?" And I said, "He told me that I'd make my dad proud." And I remember being the best feeling. And then I got my EMT, and I remember telling his best friend that I passed and I did it. And I remember him telling me that when I would get my medic, he would give me my dad's pins. He would pin them on my shirt for me. And I looked forward to that. And then the following month, my dad's best friend killed himself too. So it was really hard, and it really opened my eyes to how mental health can really affect a person. You know, I lost my dad, and then his best friend is gone now too, and I went through this phase of, I know it's a problem, but I don't know what to do. So I kind of just put it in the back of my head, and I'd had my license for a couple years, and I wanted to go back to school. And I originally was going to go for my medic, but then I had a bad call. And I remember the person that I called that was supposed to help told me, "I don't know what to tell you. I just hope you don't have nightmares." And I realized that I knew that's not what you should say to somebody who's in a crisis. And I realized that if I can't find somebody that can help me, I'm going to be the person that somebody else can come to. Mm-hmm. So I started my process of going to school. I got my associate's degree, and I'm working on my bachelor's degree. It's my senior year. I'm really excited. I plan on going for my master's and being a therapist specifically for first responders.
It's needed.
It is.
So needed.
It's needed.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think we're all kind of blown away right now by your story. But I think even going now, you're going to help more people than you know. You thought being a paramedic, you're going to help a lot of people, but doing what you're doing right now is going to help a lot of people. And I commend you for it, for going through all that stuff and realizing, you know, we all have, when you go down that path, you got two paths that you can go. You know what I mean? You can let it drag you down, or you can do something about it. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to be the person, just because of the experience that you had, you are going to be the person that a lot of people are going to want to talk to.
I hope so.
Because you have a unique perspective on the other side of things that a lot of people may not necessarily have. And you're invested. So it's definitely going to be something, whether you're working EMS or this, I'll tell you right now, your dad's going to be proud of you for it. 100%.
Absolutely.
Because I guarantee you, you are going to help as many or more people by doing the social work thing than in EMS. And it's needed.
It is. And I know as a first responder, it's hard to find somebody to talk to unless they've done it and they understand the experiences. And that's a crucial part of first responder seeking help, is having somebody that understands how we talk and what we go through.
Absolutely. I think it's a perspective. In a, talking to Manisha, being a clinician here, I think it's a perspective that for a long time went unneeded or unchecked. Because, you know, it was, well, we read the books. This is what you guys need.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the frame of reference of actually sitting in that seat in the patrol car, or sitting in the seat in the ambulance, or sitting in the seat in the fire truck, that perspective gives you more than any book or any class in the world will ever give you.
Yeah, and it's not always the big things that affect the first responders too. And I think that's where there's a little bit of a disconnect with somebody who doesn't have that experience, is they think that it's, you know, the super graphic scenes that are always going to get to us. And it's not always that. I know for me, it's a red flower that always gets to me because of a call that I had. And unless you've been through that, it's hard to explain why that is so significant in a call.
Mm-hmm. It's those life experiences that you have, whether it be on the job or off the job, those are the triggers. Those are the hooks that always get into you. You know, it might be, I've been on runs where it's a kid and the kid's got the same shoes as my son. And you're like, holy shit, you know, that one's going to stick for a minute, because you go home and you see the shoes or the red flower or whatever. And it's about as individual as it comes. Everybody's got their own thing. And I think those are the things that really kind of stick with you. Those are your triggers. Those are your, I always call it the hook. It's the thing that's stuck in you. You can't get rid of.
So it's not a straight line from what you experienced to your current healthy state and a very positive, bright future. You underwent a lot, and a lot of people also do. So what was that arc? What did you have to do other than say, I'm going to do this? That's an oversimplification of probably what you actually did. You probably had a lot of struggles along the way, conversations, maybe therapy. What were those things that you did to get to this point of your life?
Well, I knew that I wanted to be able to help fellow first responders. And I, at first, was going to go to school for psychology. And then I did more research and I realized that psychology versus therapy is more of the talking. And from my experience, having somebody to talk to who understands is so much better than just a, here's a diagnosis for you, be on your way. And I know that having a partner that you could talk to always really helped versus, hey, I'm going to just send you somewhere where you're going to get some letters that are telling you what's wrong with you.
Maybe some meds and a note to say, go talk to a therapist.
Yeah.
You cut out the middleman in a way, right? So you sought therapy that allowed you to kind of talk through these issues. You actually had that practical application in your own as the patient then.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that was part of the reason what pushed me towards this is I was trying to find a therapist who could understand how we talk and the things that we experience. And I was having a really hard time with that. And I realized that if I'm not going to find somebody, if I'm not easily able to find this, I know other people aren't either. And I want to change that. And I always said that, like, my dad, no one's going to remember his name in 100 years, but I know that people are going to be alive in 100 years because of the people he's helped now. And I said, that's what I want to do. And for me, that's like the meaning of life, is being able to have a positive impact in people so that they can continue.
That's awesome. You mentioned earlier that one of the initial emotions you felt were anger. And I think that's one of the biggest things that people kind of try to push down. They try to bury those intense feelings, because a lot of intensity comes with anger and things like that, which anger is mostly a secondary emotion, and fear is usually the core of what that is. But how did you express that? How did you like come to terms with your initial emotions and kind of express them through? Was there a process where you tried to not deal with them? Was there a process where like something had to snap you out of it?
There definitely was. I know for the first like week that my dad was gone, I didn't let myself believe that he was gone. He worked night shifts, so during the day, I would just tell myself, oh, he's sleeping, and then I'd leave the house while he would be up getting ready for work, and then I'd come home after he would have left for work and just tell myself that he was at work. I didn't want to believe that he was gone, and his best friend actually helped me with that. He had a conversation and said, hey, listen, he's gone, and it sucks, and it's going to hurt, but you have to feel these emotions, or you're not going to end up okay.
Wow. So that support was there.
It was. And that's what was so great that I got to do my third ride with him. And I remember him telling me that he, when he gets burnt out on the job, as we all do, he looks out the window, and while they're coding down the road, the windows always reflect back, and he looks at the lights as he's coding, and that reminds him what he does. And that's something that's always stuck with me. And every time I'm coding down the road and I see that, I think of him and I think of my dad. And that's also kind of why it hurt so much that he was gone too, is that he was there for me and helped me process my dad's death. And now he's gone too. And that was really hard.
Do you think that a program like FST5 can help eliminate some of the stress somebody like you'll go through in the future?
Yeah, FST5 wants to be a little bit of that bridge, not even a little bit, like the whole connection, if we can be. And so, and we're still relatively new, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, we're lucky enough to have you and be a part of this team. We're lucky enough to have Jeff and Mike. And so what are some ways that we can help bridge that gap? Because we've talked about this in multiple different episodes, and we've talked about it in multiple different ways. The stigma's strong.
It is.
The stigma of, like, reaching out, talking to someone is strong. And the generations before you guys and the ones before them, it was literally suck it up. You guys will get through. This is what you're here for. You know, the community sees you as heroes. And so it's kind of the space of, like, who do you guys reach out to if you guys are supposed to be the ones saving everyone else's lives, right? Like, you got to have some kind of space there. So what I'm asking is, what are some ways that FST5 can help make the state of Michigan more of a place where we want to talk about? We want to talk about the things that people don't talk about.
I think peers are a great way to do that. It doesn't always, as first responder and having a bad call, it doesn't always have to go straight to needing a mental health professional.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you just need a peer to talk to and say, hey, this is how it went. Tell me I'm not alone. I think that's a big thing with mental health, is knowing that you're not alone. And one thing that I am not ashamed of at all is to say that I got help. And there's such a stigma around seeking help, but I think that being open about it is going to lessen that stigma. We see and do things that not a lot of people get to, and it's awesome at times. And then other times it's hard, and it's okay to say, I'm not okay. And losing my dad has shown me that. Sorry.
Okay. You're doing fine.
Doing better than me.
After I lost my dad, I realized how much mental health can really affect a person. It's not just depression or anxiety. There's more to it, and to silently struggle is not fair, and no one should have to do it.
That's a big thing. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that you may not ever know that you cross paths with every day that's there. They're there. They're struggling, like you said, in silence. And the reason why they struggle in silence is they're afraid to talk about it. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of what people think. They're afraid of the stigma that's attached to them. And that's the sad part, is, you know, it's you don't realize what other people are going through sometimes. You may think you know, but you have no idea. And like we talked about here today, you've touched on it. Manisha's touched on it. We all have. You know, we've got programs now that we never had before. Mm-hmm. You know, Frontline Strong, number one, we never had that even 5 years ago. We had the same struggles that you talked about. You know, I go talk to somebody once a week. I had the same problem that you were talking about. I couldn't find somebody. Mm-hmm. Nobody. They were either, oh, tell me all your war stories, or I had some lady that I made cry by telling her what I saw, you know. And the cool part about it is nowadays we all said enough. We're sick and tired of this bullshit where we got to find shit on our own. Mm-hmm. We've lost enough people that we've loved. We've struggled enough that we said the system is screwed up and we need to fix it. And if nobody's going to go fix it, who's going to go fix it? We are. Mm-hmm. And it's people like you. It's people like Manisha and Frontline Strong. It's people who are doing peer support. It's people who are doing SISM. It's the clinicians who are going to learn to talk, how to talk to us. That is how we're changing this. And we're doing it because if we didn't, all of our friends who we lost along the way, what for? We're doing it for them. We're doing it for ourselves who struggled for how many years in silence because we were afraid to talk about it. So it's nice to see nowadays we've got programs like FST5, who is first responder based, and they're bringing in first responders to do it, you know?
I think that's amazing.
It is, and it's something that, you know, if no matter where you're listening to this podcast, find those people, find the peers, find the clinicians, and if you can't, do it. If you have the opportunity to do this stuff, do it. Because you turn your, like you're talking today, you turned your story from a big negative into a positive. You said something that was completely blew me away, and it just encompasses what we're doing here today. 100 years from now, somebody's going to be 100 years old because of what you did today. Think about that. Think about 5 years ago when we didn't have that. And that's where I can't say enough about the stuff that everybody's doing. I don't care if even down to the person who's having a conversation at the kitchen table about how they went to go see a therapist, you're moving the ball forward. You don't have to be a peer. You don't have to be a clinician. That's how we move this stuff forward. And I applaud everyone who's doing it because what you said right there, you never know which person you just got to 100 years old. You don't know which person you just got to their daughter's wedding. You never know which person you just got to their kid's graduation. So think about that next time you want to talk shit about somebody who's going to get mental health help or who says I'm struggling or who's talking about those types of things. Because in the end, you don't know which person you just helped get to those benchmarks. So I give you a lot of credit for what you're doing because even coming on here and talking about it is hard. But I guarantee what you just did today, you may never meet the person, but I guarantee you what you just did today got somebody to 100 years old.
I want other people to be able to run calls with their dad.
Yes, and I applaud you for it. That's awesome. That's what I said. He's proud of you for what you're doing today.
Thank you.
Today, absolutely. Talking about it in this realm, in this circle, there's nothing braver than stepping up and talking about this shit in a very public forum.
Yeah, it's hard, and I wish that I could say that my dad was here and he was seeing all of this and hearing all of this, but the reality is I'm doing this because of him, because he died, and I'm able to turn such a tragic event into something so positive for me and for all the first responders that are out there because they're hearing a real life story. It's not, oh, my partner's partner's partner struggled one time. It's, no, this is a real thing and it has an impact. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to struggle. We all do. But get that help so that you can continue.
I can't say it any better. I think that's where we close it out right there. We leave those parting words right there because none of us at this table are going to say it any better.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you for your bravery today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on. Honestly.
We got to put this out there, guys. If anybody is struggling and needs help with anything, if you are in the Michigan area and you are a first responder or a family member of a first responder, please don't hesitate to reach out to FST5 at 1-833-34-STRONG. If you are any place around the country, and we do have a lot of loyal listeners throughout the country right now, please don't hesitate to reach out to 988. You can pick up from any phone and call and get the help that you need, or you can give us a call directly at 1-833-34-STRONG.
Also, you can check out the website at www.fst5.org for more information as well.
Yeah, a lot of good culturally competent
clinicians.
Yes, there's a lot of very good culturally competent clinicians on that website to inspired by people like you. Awesome. Thank you again, Ashley.
We can't wait to see you on the website as a clinician as well.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm really excited. I can't wait to see what FST5 is going to grow into, and I'm so excited to be a part of it.
Well, we're happy to have you.
Thank you for listening to the Minds on the Frontline podcast. If you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of harming oneself, please call the National Suicide Hotline at 988. Or if you're in the state of Michigan, 1-833-34-STRONG. That's 1-833-347-8766. Thank you for listening and have a great day.